right, welcome everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Dan, your host, and this is a place that we could talk about business concepts. So we can take some new concept if you're first getting started or you've been in the business for a long time. This is sort of like a space where you can learn no matter what level that you're on. And it's non-intimidating. It's not something that we try to put the terminology above everybody's head. It's something that we kind of boil it down to the the basic principles. And if all of us are trying to sort of achieve the same thing, which is adding value out into the marketplace, we can kind of self-discover and ferret out our own issues and problems. So that's what we have here. We're very grateful to have this real estate on Saturdays to help all of you budding entrepreneurs. The one thing that I want to do with having this show out there is to get people that are sidelined right now that either have doubt or they don't think it's the proper time or they don't have the connections or the money to get off the sideline and start grinding. Start getting out there and doing your hustle. Because, I know there's some brands out there that really want things to be perfect on the onset, and it's just not a reality in the business world. You got to put yourself out there, make all the mistakes that you possibly can, get them out of the way so you can set sail and make some of those dreams come true. So this is sort of like a shortening the learning curve type of show. So don't be bashful. If you have a question about something that maybe is escaping you, the great entrepreneurs of the world are someone who has a good balance between their logical brain, numbers and spreadsheets, and their imaginative brain, people who can use their imagination and dream. And so when you have a good balance between the two, you can be good at your numbers as well as dreaming up the next concepts that, normal people, and I put that in air quotes, normal people have a hard time picturing things that don't already exist. So when you say something like Joe's going to have the first, business on Mars, right? That sounds kind of crazy. And I live in that realm of being just off the reservation enough that most of you think I probably am a little bit nuts, and I'm okay with that. And like I said, it's what romanticizes part of business. So that's why I want to advocate for all of you who are on the sidelines. This is a good time to figure out why. Like what's keeping you back? People sit down at my conference table. They bring their business ideas, and I'll tell you, it's probably the same six things that keep getting recycled. Either I had one guy sit down with me and say that he was really good at detailing cars, and he really wanted to do it because he loved cars and he loved making them look shiny, right? And he thought, but I don't have $200,000 to buy the machinery and buy a building and get all the tools, and I don't have any experience hiring people. I just know that I could do it. And I said, here, listen to me real quick. What you think, what the world has populated your brain with, what you think might not be true. What if I told you that there are a bunch of buildings right now that are empty that you don't have to build? And those empty buildings, you might not even have to buy. And what if you have a shop that's already doing similar to what you're doing, and it sits idle sometimes? Do you know that you can go out the marketplace and find some underutilized stuff and lease or rent and or partner with someone and get your start without spending $200,000? Because if it were me and I was starting a new business, I would have to make sure that I really like doing it. I would have to practice it out to make sure I wanted to do this every day of my life. Now, do you want to have $200,000 invested by the time that you figure like, I got to be on my back a whole lot and I got to work 20 hours, a day and whatever. I'd rather be a leasee at that point instead of a buy. So don't put all of your resources at the front end. We do what's called a proof of concept, right? We small scale prove that something exists and it has a demand for it and we could actually perform it and we're in love with it and it fits in our world. And when we do it at a small scale, if we can get the math to work on a small scale, then we can blow it up. And then you can buy your buildings and hire your staffs and really take it on. So over the course of the years, many of you watched me start small businesses. I started a coffee company. I started just recently a coffee shop. I've done a studio. I've done mail order. I've done reptile expos, right? Every different course took me in a direction where I got to play with it in its smallest form. And then I got to figure out if it had enough money in it. What would happen if you worked your 40-hour week in your job and your margins were so light that you made less than minimum wage? How long would you do that? And so that's one of the philosophical one of those philosophies that gets you off of the sidelines is that what you think you know about business might not be what it is. And you're going to get support from other entrepreneurs who've made mistakes. Like, we've lost $10,000 on something that, you know, could have happened. So it's not required that every $10,000 you spend needs to be that game winner or that Hail Mary, right? You spend and invest what you can afford to lose, and you know that even if you lose it, you use it as an experience to learn from it, and then you regroup and go back and tackle it again. And so that's what this show's all about. Now, in studio here, we have a guest, and before I introduce the guest, let me tell you about why he is here. So my biggest fear about business was I did not see the new entrepreneurs making their way into the marketplace. And I knew that there were going to be a ton of entrepreneurs that were retiring or selling their stuff off, but there weren't people to replace him behind, right? And so when I see young entrepreneurs that have that hustle, that are all in, that are going in, it inspires me. It makes me want to work harder. And so we have three hosts down at the studio who have created a podcast. All of them are in the entertainment field, right? You consider yourself in the entertainment field, but I wanted to introduce them because they have that hustle, and so I wanted to pick their brains a little bit. And knowing that, just hearing from a guy like me, right, it might be he's not as believable. A guy's doing it right now in real time. So, Art, thank you for joining me. Oh, I really appreciate it. And if I didn't do justice to your introduction, why don't you tell everybody who you are and where you came from?
Yes, my name is Art Ward. I'm the current host of Can't Knock the Pod podcast, along with DJ Chip Banks and Lissette Alina, who they're not here today, but I'm a represent for all of us here. And we're on episode 93.
We almost just put
it
there.
Almost to 100, man. I can't believe it. Yeah, so we all are in the entertainment field as far as we throw events. And like I said, DJ Chip Banks, he's a DJ who DJs everywhere. Lissette, she's always throwing events. So we came together, and that's how we got Can't Knock the Pod. I mean, it was something that I wanted to do. And, man, when I tell you that, I can't believe that we're on episode 93 of something that just started as like, a lot of people telling me, like, hey, you should start a podcast. You should start a podcast. And we did it, man. And here we are. Now we're getting ready to start a radio show as well. So I'm pleased with it, man.
Your voice is amazing, man. It's one of those things. You are so soothing when you talk. I love it. So how did the podcast get its birth? Where'd that come from?
It actually came from I'm a big fan of Joe Budden, who was a famous podcaster. So I used to listen to him, and I'm like, I can do this. And my friends are like, man, you can do this. So it was really the support of my friends just telling me I can do it that made me believe that I can do it. So it was a lady by the name of Tracy Wimbush, who I'm sure you know.
Right.
She actually, because I didn't know where I was going to start it. I was like that guy like you just were talking about. I didn't know where I was going to do it at or the equipment. I didn't have the money. But I actually found a lady. She told me she had a studio. I just bumped into her at the Youngstown Fest downtown one day, and I was just telling her. She was like, yo, I have a studio. You could come do it here. You can rent it. Downtown is in the Chase building. So I'm like, that's a sign. We have to do it.
Right.
So we did it there all up until the pandemic came. Then the pandemic came, and it's like, all right, the studio got to get shut down because they're really shutting down the building. And it was like, what do we do now? So at that point, I wasn't ready to stop because we were a good maybe 50 episodes in or something close to that. I said, I have an extra bedroom in my house. I'm maxing out all my credit cards. So pretty much that's what I did. I turned a spare bedroom into a pretty nice studio where we can record at. It's small, only fits us three. So we went there next with the help of my grandparents, of course. They helped me do it because I had to put new floors in, do the walls, all that kind of stuff. Then I had to buy all the equipment because we went from, you know, renting it. So now I have to own the equipment if we want to continue. So we did that for a while. And luckily, Chip was getting married, getting a tailored suit in your building.
Yes, right.
And he walked in and seen it and he said, Art, this studio is amazing. Like, you have to see it. It's the Youngstown studio. And, you know how we went. I called you. We met, and now we're down at the Youngstown studio, man, and I couldn't be more happier, man.
Beautiful. So, and that early challenge when, you know, you were on the right path, you were doing it, but then that thing that made you say, am I going to do this serious? I'm about to take a big step out and a big risk on that. Most people would have been like, all right, maybe it's not for me. So how'd you guys hang tight in there?
It was just the support of the listeners. Like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy when you're like, people come up to you or people message you like, yo, I listen to you every morning, every day on my way to work. I mean, every Tuesday, Wednesday we drop. So I listen to you every Wednesday on my drive to work, and I love you guys, or people messaging us, or people buying our merch. Like right now I'm wearing a shirt. So people were buying our sweatshirts and things like that. And it was like we couldn't stop. It was almost like we filled a void for people. So now it's not like for fun anymore. It's almost like we have to continue to do it. And then that's kind of the mentality we took on it.
All right, so now you mentioned that you had a mentor as far as the podcast. Are you mentoring under any business people? Because, I mean, you guys got a really solid business plan.
Yeah.
And so who's your information from that coming from?
Well, as far as I'm actually working with up-and-coming people who want to learn the business of pod and how to do it. Like I said, I do have a studio in my house now.
Nice.
So I'm going to utilize that more now.
Gotcha.
And since the pandemic is kind of, you know, it's not as how it was a couple months ago last year. So, and that's what that was another reason I went ahead and did the room, because I'm like, not only can we use it, but I can use it, let other people use it as well. And then that's what I'm kind of getting into now. I'm opening up. As soon as I leave here, I got a guy coming to look at it and want to use it. So that's kind of where I'm going.
Beautiful. And what you also need to know, and this is out to our listeners, like, I know that there's an art that's in his 20s right now, and he's getting some inspiration from you that this can be done. Don't be afraid to take people who are ahead of you and tap into their knowledge. I mean, one thing that can save you from making a mistake that I made or art made along the way. So what was your biggest, like, oh crap moment in Can't Knock the Pod? Did you make any big
The pandemic was like that was, and then when the pandemic came, I got really antsy. So I bought a lot of stuff off the websites, and me wanting to hurry up, we got to record next week. So I probably overpaid on everything I bought because I needed it rushed, because I needed it here tomorrow. I have to record next week.
Right.
So, and it still didn't come because of the pandemic. So I'm paying for this extra things to come. And that and I probably could have been a little more patient on that. You know, I probably wasted a lot of money doing that. But I really had no hiccups on it, man, because that's how I know we're supposed to be doing this, because it's been super smooth once we put our foot down and just really got focused on it, because we all have other jobs and other things that we do, but we all come together for this 2 hours a week and come together for this pod and been consistent at it, you know?
So one of the big questions we get from this generation, 55 and older, which is the demographics for this radio station, is if they wanted to reach the your generations, they consume media different, you know, the listening to the radio versus doing podcasts. Mm-hmm. And so I get asked a lot, how do I reach you guys in your stuff? So how do you consume media different than traditional media?
Well, podcasting is one. That's a whole, it's not new, but it's still kind of new to people.
Right.
A lot of people aren't really into it. So you almost got to coach them on how to even listen to a podcast.
Because you do Instagram too, right? You do a lot of stuff.
We have
over there.
All the social media. To be honest, us being so so in-depth in the media field, like all of us are in the social media, and like I said, we throw events. We're all super popular.
Right.
So that, I'm not going to lie, that was a big help for us. And that's kind of why I chose DJ Chip Banks, who's my best friend. Like, I was his best man in his wedding. That was a no-brainer. And Lissette, I've known her pretty much since high school. And I know her work ethic, so she was also a no-brainer as it coming along. But yeah, we're all pretty popular, so that kind of helped us touch a lot of place people. But if I was an older person and I was trying to do that you have to come into our field. You know, you have to get on the social media, because that's where we're at. That's where we get our news from. Like, I get all my news from Twitter. You know, as soon as something happens, that's the first place I go.
Okay.
Is to, is it real or not? And that's, that's, this is what it is. I just go to Twitter first. So that's pretty much, I'm sure 55 and over don't even have a Twitter.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of the big difference in us and them, you know?
Right. If you're just joining us, we have Art Ward here. We're talking about his podcast, Can't Knock the Pod. He's a young entrepreneur in our area and integrated into the entertainment field. So anybody who's, you know, creating value in this area and could potentially create resources and jobs and all that, I'm, you know, all of us got your back and really want you to do well. And I've listened, you know, to quite a number of your shows, and the chemistry that all of you have, you guys are a really entertaining show. And it feels like you've been friends for your entire life. Just because of that. And it's hard to replicate if you listen to shows where it's just a bunch of hosts that don't know to that level. Mm-hmm. So you think that's your secret sauce, is your partners?
It's definitely our secret sauce. Like, I know where DJ Chip Banks is going to go sometimes, maybe before he even knows where he's going to go. Or I can easier lead him into where he wants to go, because I know him personally. You know, we talk all the time. Like, we have group chats together, and that has carried over. Like I said, we are now, it carried over to us getting a radio show on Loud 102.3 now. We're on Fridays with them, and they say the same thing because of the chemistry that we all show.
Sure.
And it's a little different doing radio, doing it as a podcast, so we're still, like, doing that little transition. But the chemistry is definitely the biggest thing.
So I was listening that app that you guys are on, and I see you come up on it. What was that called? Something room.
Clubhouse.
Yes. So I tried to get this. I tried to follow it, and it's escaping, you know, my aged brain here. So tell me a little bit about what that is.
Okay, so Clubhouse is it's kind of the new social media. It's almost like a voice chat.
Okay,
that's what it is. So a group of people come in there. You title the rooms different things. So I'm not gonna lie, it was a lot better when it first came out. You know, it was geared more towards celebrities. So when I first got on it, it would be like a celebrity that I follow. I have a room, and he's in there talking. So now I could jump in the room and hear what he's talking about. He's talking to fans, and it's a thing called the stage. So once you first get in the room, you're at the bottom. You can raise your hand, and they bring you to the stage where now you can interact with the people that's on the stage.
Oh, nice.
So then when I first got in, I'm listening to it was right around Jay-Z's birthday when I first got on the app. So that was like in December of last year. And they had all his producers speaking on how they created his albums. So me being a fan, I was in there like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. You know, I'm hearing famous people come in there, and they're just telling different stories about Jay-Z. And it was like, this can't be real. You know what I mean? It's people that I've been following. So that's how it kind of started. Now it's more so. Also, I did get a lot of stock tips on there as well. There were like stock rooms, and they're still going on like that. You just kind of got to find what room you want to jump into and listen, and then you can raise your hand and participate in them, and then continue.
All right, we're going to take a break real quick. We'll come back and talk a little bit more with Art. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Dania, your host in studio today. We are talking with Art Ward, who is a local entertainer and podcast host and just all around entrepreneur. We're going to take some questions in the next hour. So if you want to call the phone numbers, 330-729-9977, or you can text me here at 333-1570. And a couple questions, and maybe Art and I can field this out a little bit. This question says, I have a great productive employee. I just have found out that he's been a jerk to some of our better customers, and I don't want to give up the productivity for the behaviors. What should I do? Any opinion, Mr. Art? Got a really good moneymaker, somebody who's that rainmaker, right? But they're a little bit of a jerk. What opinion would you give on this?
There's a lot of rich jerks. I will say that.
Yeah, right?
But it's never a good thing to be a jerk. You know, I would just ease back on that a little bit. But yeah.
All right. So if and here's this will be for your entire business career. You as an employer are going to have to be HR, right? So you're going to have to know how to maneuver personalities and to bring out the best in your employees. All of them are going to have idiosyncrasies and hangups. You might have someone that gets, you know, super you know, shy or scared, or might have some hangups if you put them in the wrong situations. And you've got to be able to recognize the different personality types and where they excel. So if you've got a person that on the production standpoint is really great, but has a tendency when it comes to social situations to be overbearing or type A personality or maybe a little bit of a bully, then I would do this. I would sit down with dude and I would say, listen, that stuff is, you know, that's not how we roll around here, and you need to tone it back. You need to treat our customers like they're family and friends, or you know we're just going to have to take the public side of what you do, and we're going to have to put it on the back shelf and only use you in public settings when it's necessary. But first off, I'd be interested to see what it was about. You never know what your employees are going through. I mean, somebody might have just died, somebody might be sick, somebody just might be stressed out, and this might be your opener to be able to dig a little bit more, and you might be able to help them. So use this as an indicator that you don't know enough about their current situation, and show your caring, you know, organs, and get to know them a little bit better. And like Art said, that you got to dial that stuff back, because, you know, hemorrhaging customers for a rainmaker, you know, every marketer and advertiser, you tell you that customers are like your gold, right? And you got to treat them well so that they will keep reciprocating business your way. And, you know, I know that your money makers are valuable too, but not as valuable as those customers. So, good question. And okay, I just started doing business and I am young, and I don't think that my peers or my customers take me seriously. How do I start overcoming people not taking me seriously? All right. In the business world, we call this powdered butt syndrome. Okay. And what that is, that if a person is old enough to have powdered your butt, right, they have a really tough time taking advice from you.
Ooh, yes.
And so now here's the thing, though, that is the generation that has the best information. So sometimes you got to have be able to take a little bit of disrespect and feeling a little bit minimized. You got to buck up a little bit and know that they're an encyclopedia of information. If you can get them talking about what you should do, you know, try to get over the fact that they're going to hurt your feel bads a little bit, but tap into the information they got rolling around in their head.
Consistency.
Absolutely.
Once they see you keep doing it and keep going for it, they'll come around.
Boom. That is perfect. Around. Absolutely. Okay, let's see. I want to open a thrift store, and I'm curious if I should buy or rent a building. So this is a pretty logical determination. If you sit down with any like accountant or financial people, owning a building is sort of like having a kid, right? Once you have it, you're responsible for its upkeep and your insurances and compliancy, and it poses a major liability. So how I answer this, if you have an infrastructure, a company infrastructure, where you're good at supporting physical things, then of course you bring in the liability. You don't have a monthly payment. But if you're not good at those things, if you don't have like every contractor and plumber and electrician and people who can fix things and maintain things, then let somebody else do that. It's sort of that old philosophy. Let specialized people what they do best. Don't try to deprive people from making a dollar. So use your accountants and use your attorneys and use these specialized people, because they will save you a ton of hassle in the future. And that's inclusive of whether or not you should buy a building. I'm going to ask you, first thing I'm going to say, are you good at owning buildings? And if you don't know if you're good, then guess what you should do?
Rent.
Go rent. Okay. So thank you for that question. We're gonna keep you around for one more segment. I want to ask you some more questions about your a little bit of your history. I think it's always good, especially within these, you know, I'm just getting started people. I have a guy that we're going to be bringing on the show in the next couple of weeks to talk about an apparel company, and he's produced his first product, right? And all of the people around him, super supportive, buying him, giving him that first leg up. But we're going to concoct some advice for him about you know, what second steps, like the first steps for you guys were making that initial investment, and then you were gauging like how people were responding to it. But there's some doubt that comes in at a certain point. We're going to feel that out. All right, you guys are listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. We're going to come back, talk to Art Ward a little bit more after this break. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. If you're just joining us, we have Art Ward in studio. We're talking about entrepreneurship, answering some questions, and then giving some background and history. Off air, Art just said or asked me about the coffee shop that we're opening over in Struthers. And what you notice about me, if you paid attention to anything we do around town, is it usually happens like it feels very random,
super fast,
right? And so what happens is, especially in our area, a lot of successes come from how many people you're networked with and the people that can like make your world a ton easier. So the more people like Art that I know, the more enabled I am to do. So every once in a while, somebody will like stumble into my world that matches up with something I intend to do, and I pull the trigger, because that is the most valuable resource for us is cooperations with other people. And, you know, Art and these guys are really integrated in entertainment. And for the longest time, we've wanted to do our own shows, do our own public, you know, comedians or music or whatever. So I know that we are going to cooperate with you guys in a heartbeat to bring those kind of things to the Valley. No doubt.
Sure. Yeah, that's right up our alley. That's what we do. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's what got us here, is the concerts, events, and the parties. You know, that's where that's where we got our feet planted at first, and then everything else is has to trickle from that.
So I've always had an interest in coffee. Like, I'm a big coffee snob. Art is not, right?
Not at all.
I'm going to convert Art at one point where the day that he is enjoying a double espresso at Joe's shop, I will say that's the victory for my act.
I want to, because the way you come in the studio with that cup, it right? looks so cool. I'm like, I want to look that cool drinking coffee.
Yeah. So that will be my we'll definitely get you set up. I'll get your taste and what you really like. Do you like sweet stuff, or do you like
both? I like sweet.
How about wine? Would you drink wine?
Yeah, I drink wine.
Okay. Are you on the sweeter side of wine, or do you like the drier types of wine?
I'm more on the sweeter side than the drier. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. To bring all of you up to speed, so we have a suite over in Struthers, Youngstown Poland Road, and we've been doing a ton of business with the city of Struthers. We've kind of advocated for doing whatever we can to bring enterprises and you know, mentorship. I even want to do a business incubator over in Struthers to be able to give people in that community a place that if they wanted to start a business, that they can use some of my resources to get a start. That's a lot of the stuff. If you can just see what a business looks like when it operates, you can go emulate that somewhere else. But where do you go? Where's somebody going to let you peek in, and where the accounting happens and where the production happens? And so we have that suite next to the Youngstown Computer Suite, and we figured we were going to take that into and do like a makerspace where we can show people how to use electronics. And then it dawned on me to get this coffee thing going, because in order to have shoppers come in and buy this stuff from the makerspace, you got to have some kind of draw. People aren't just going to wander in, because there are better places to buy stuff than my makerspace in Struthers. So if I can get people in the door to drink coffee, and then I've got Youngstown area products where businesses in the community can get supported at the same time, bam, you got lightning strike right there.
No brainer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
330-729-9977. I'm going to read another. Actually, I wanted to again give some history on some of the entertainment. So before the podcasting, how did you guys get linked up with you know, Covelli Center and all of the radio stations that you do business with now?
It was from the parties, man. In 2008, I want to say, we threw our first big party in the city, and that was successful, and it really just trickled from there. Like, it was from parties, and then people were saying that we can bring out 500 to 1,000 people. Like, I have pictures with 1,000 people in the Metroplex from a party that we just threw. You know, no artists, just hey, we rented this space out. Come here, you know. So that people start noticing that, and then they start contacting us for concerts and different things like that. So pretty much any. any concert that comes to the city, we know about, or we kind of got our hand in it because we have a great relationship with the Covelli Center, great relationship with the radio stations, and it's really all came from a party, really, you know. But and that helped us to, like I said, that helps with your audience. You know, they know us from that. So now that they see that, oh, these guys do a podcast. I party with these guys. I listen to see what they have to say, and that's how it just continues.
All right, so let me pick your brain on this. Maybe you can help us in the Valley here, okay, change our mentality on it. So I got pissed off a couple years ago. We had the Nutcracker, which was this amazing thing come to town, right? And it was hugely produced. We got the attention of an outside promoter to come here, and it only filled halfway. Like, there were empty seats everywhere. So if we can't either make it an easy place to promote a show, or we're running the wrong kind of entertainment, mm-hmm, what say you? What would you do if you were in that promoter seat to fill up the venues or the stuff that are coming to town?
You just got to get out here. You got to get out here in these streets. Like, I come from I think I'm lucky because, you know how they say, these kids grew up all on the internet and all they know is social media. Well, I was lucky enough to, when we first started throwing our events, we had to get out here and tag cars. That was one of the things that we were, like, really known for. We get out here on the pavement, go to parking lots, get flyers. And
you're that guy.
I'm that guy. I'm that guy that we're not afraid to get in the rain. We're out there putting a flyer on your windshield.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the hustle that I was talking about. They are all in. Yeah, I love it. In. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we used to do that. We used to, like, wait till, like, maybe, like, to let the different clubs or different events get packed. So, like, 11, 12 o'clock, that's when we leave the house, and we're out there with 1,000 flyers each and just tagging the cars and, you know, wow, making sure every parking lot that, you know, is hit with them. And that's kind of how we started. Now, it has changed from that. A lot of people don't do that anymore. It's really all about your network. Like, I don't promote everything just because I know people, when they see me promoting it, they know it's official.
So you're not going to do the Nutcracker. You're not going to be putting flyers out for the Nutcracker art, are you? Is that what you're saying?
I would if the check is cut. I'm promoting the Nutcracker. You know, I will say that. So it's just all about getting out there. Like I said, a lot of the older people don't utilize social media as much as they should. But even if they do, they don't have the following to make it make sense. You know what I mean? So, like, if my grandmother was to put on an event and put it on social media, it's not really going to move because she's not friends with people my age,
right,
that need to get out there. So you really have to tap in with an influencer or someone that can reach the rest of the people that you want. That's, like, the best advice I can give, is just tap in with somebody that's already doing it, that can, and that's what people do with us. They see that we're already doing it or have done it, so they tap in and we go from there.
All right, let's spend a couple minutes here dreaming forward. So I know where you're at right now. We profile where you came from, but what's next with the trio? Like, when you picture it in its best form, like 10 years in the future, what the heck are you guys doing?
I don't know if it'll be podcasting. Okay. We'll see with that. Like I said, where we're at now, we never imagined. Like, I didn't really see 100 episodes. I really didn't see. When I was younger, I will say I did want to be a broadcaster. I used to be one of them people that pushed mute on the TV and kind of, like, tried to broadcast a game, a sports game.
Oh,
like,
no,
that.
Kidding. Color. Yeah.
So
nice.
I kind of got away from that as I got older, but now I'm, like, coming back to that, like, right now. Like, I'm on 570. I'm on the radio broadcasting. So I can kind of see that, like, we already have the radio show. I say a syndicated radio show, man.
Okay. That's national, baby.
National syndicated show is where I see us going, and hopefully, like, I didn't see it a year ago, but it can happen. Like, it's happening.
Yeah, I totally think you guys have national appeal. I think, yeah, like I said, you just don't get the chemistry of you three together in the same room with just people that you assemble after the fact. So that's why I said you got grand appeal, and you got an audience and a network that you developed the hard way. You just don't go by that audience. You earned it, right?
Yes, I truly say we earned it, and we take pride on that. Like, we truly take pride on what we earned and the work we put in, because nobody has done it. You know, we didn't we had to do it ourselves. We jump out without a parachute. That's what I always call it. Like, we consistently jump without a parachute and just kind of like figure it out as we're coming down to the ground.
Scary proposition, but the best way to do it, isn't it?
It is. It's the best way to do it.
So in your trio, you're always going to have like the dreamer, right? The guy who's grounded and maybe will push against you a little bit. So Give me the personality types of all three of you. Who's the dreamer?
I would say Chip Banks is the dreamer.
Okay.
Not even a dreamer. He has a vision where he can see like, yo, this can be this and that. So I kind of, if he says it, I'm like, okay, we can do it. Like, if Chip says it, like, it can happen. I'm kind of more of the, like, I ground him a little bit, you know, and then once he says something, I'll see it, and then we can put it into play like that. Set, she's a dreamer as well. I'll say she's definitely a little sister to us. She kind of just, you know, whatever you guys want to do, she's with it. She's a team player. That's what I love about Set. She's a team player, even though I don't know where she is right now. But
yeah, the team is here, Lissette.
Yeah, I don't know. She's supposed to be here with me, but she's, like I said, she's probably working because we all have jobs. But yeah, I would say our motivation comes from all of us. I'm difficult. I'm probably the most difficult one out of all of it. But it's my baby, you know. It's something like, this is, you know.
That's
my,
you.
Yeah, that's me, but it couldn't be me without them, though. Right. So, you know what I mean? I definitely acknowledge that. And it has helped our relationship tremendously.
So tell us about Lissette. Like, what does she do in entertainment? What's her full-time
Lissette
gig?
Does everything. She's probably the most active still out here than all of us. She's on, I want to say she's also on the committee for, like, the Ohio Entertainment Awards. She's a host. And on that, she throws showcases for local artists. Like, she had one yesterday where local hip-hop artists come and rap and perform, I mean, from singers to rappers. So, and she's a whole party host, and she does that every weekend as well. So yeah, Sets doesn't stop, like,
all right,
always moving. And that's one of the reasons why when we first started, Set wasn't on our show at first. Like, I probably was like 3 to 4 episodes in before I brought Lissette on, but I just knew I needed her. I needed someone that was still moving and active like that, and that's how she got there.
Now, Chip, did I see that Chip was running music for Nelly?
Yeah, Chip's the man. So I want you to know that Chip is the man.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, we've been rocking for, like I said, I want to say even before 08. Yeah, he was Nelly's DJ, and that goes to our relationship with the Covelli Center. Nelly came into town. They needed a DJ to open the show. First person they call is DJ Chip Banks. And then that's just how it's been for years, because they respect us. They see the work we put in. And, yeah, it was great. Like, I didn't get to meet Nelly because he was a big COVID. You know, he's on that, you know,
right,
which I understand. But it was great. It was a nice show.
Yeah, and that surprised me. I didn't know that artists didn't have their own DJs.
Well, when he performed, he has his own DJ.
Okay.
But before he came out, you know, you got to, you know, do something for the crowd.
Gotcha.
Because he didn't have any opening acts. So Chip was mainly the opening
act.
The act. So, yeah, he got out there and rocked for, I want to say, 45 minutes, maybe an hour with the crowd and, you know.
So I got to know, how many hours a day do you guys put into work? Because I mean, I know you got day gigs, plus you're doing video editing, doing audio editing, and producing content.
That's why I was kind of late. I wasn't late here, but I got here directly on time, which I wanted to be earlier. I'm more of a night owl, so when I get on the computer every day to look at topics, and I'm probably up pretty much late doing it because I'm a night owl for some reason. So I want to say out of a 24-hour day, we're working, like, we're working almost 20, man. You know, 18 hours for sure. We don't really sleep much.
Oh, man. But how long have you been doing that rugged schedule? A couple years at least.
Even before then, because, like I said, when we did the events, we had a rap group. You know, this is how we're programmed. Like, we're programmed to go nonstop. Like, our brains don't stop. Like, at all, you know, it's a constant, and that's the life of an entrepreneur. you know, you always thinking of what's next or what can I do to make this better or how can I make this easier for the people around me. And it's been like that for real for over 10 years at this point.
Yeah, and the investment, I mean, this industry is, you know, because of COVID and everybody went to podcasting, it diluted the market a little bit,
right? Oh, for
right?
sure.
But
for sure.
It made more people be listeners of it. It's harder to compete for audience, but there's more people that are now used to getting their content that way. Now, in this kind of industry, I mean, there's only so many things that you can do to monetize doing this. So, for instance, like merchandise. Merchandise is great because the people that are fans and followers can buy your shirts and buy your stuff and support you that way. The other side, go ahead. You were going to say something?
No, after you get done.
Okay.
Ahead.
So, but the other side is when that you create a pool of people either with, you know, Facebook or YouTube or Twitter or wherever or the podcasting platforms, that depth of audience, you can then you allow people to buy advertising spots in those slots. You know, everybody's either in the development stage where they're trying to get their numbers to a certain spot so they can do sponsorships and advertising, or they're like the Joe Rogans of the world who are cashing those checks, right?
Big checks.
Yes, for sure.
And the piggyback of what you said is diluted. That's one of the reasons why you have to come correct. You have to make sure you sound like the competition. And that was a big, big thing for us. Like, when we first started, we could have just grabbed some mics and did it, but being from Youngstown, Ohio, and you want Youngstown, Ohio people to listen to it,
yes,
you better sound good.
That's right.
You better sound professional because they're only going to listen once. And if you're not sounding up to par with what they already are listening to, they're not going to continue to listen. So that was one thing that we wanted to make sure that we sounded like the Joe Rogans and the Joe Buttons. Just when they hear it, that, okay, this sounds professional. They really put some time into this, you know.
Now, your show is pretty regimented. You have the same segments and sequences of events, so your audience can kind of get used to it. Who puts all that stuff together? I'm guessing you.
You know it's me.
Yeah, I know it's you.
You know it's me. You know it's me.
And then your co-hosts then just feed off of that regiment.
I kind of send them out an itinerary each week, which they may or may not look at. I'm throwing a little shot at my co-host. You know, sometimes they don't look at it until we're at the studio. But, yeah, because I never want to seem like we're not taking this serious.
Right.
You know, we take this super, super serious. Like, I live, breathe, and eat, can't knock the pot. You know, every day I'm thinking of it. So, and I want my listeners and people that may become listeners to realize that, you know, it's not for play.
Right.
I'm not trying to waste your time. I'm trying to really entertain you where you come back and listen and maybe you buy some merch because you like it, you know.
Right. All right. So we only got a couple of 30 seconds here. If you want to tell our listeners where to find you guys, how to best support you.
The best support anywhere where podcasts play, we're on there. If you have an Apple phone, we're on your phone already on Apple Podcasts. If you're a Spotify user, we're on Spotify as well. You can check us out. We're on Facebook. You can like our page. Can't Knock the Pod, that's C-A-N-T, the pod, P-O-D. And, yeah, just give us a listen. Send us a I love when people send us messages that they love an episode. That really is motivation. That's the biggest motivation that we have when we find out, like, new people are listening or like specific things. So,
yeah. Beautiful. Thanks for joining me, Art.
Joe,
appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, man. I enjoy this.
All right, we're going to come back right after these messages. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Dania, your host. We talk a little bit about business and give you guys a space to talk and use and listen to the conversations and the strategies that business people in your community are using in hopes to kind of like maybe get some of you off the sidelines, participating, solving some problems, bringing some more products and services to the marketplace. It's really what makes everything better, right? We put our problem-solving brains on and we go out there and slay some things that our struggles. Not everybody can, you know, like when we're driving around and we're complaining that, you know, the line's too long here or it takes too long to get a product there. Those are like invitations for us to go fix that problem. And a lot of us have become, you know, complainers about the things that we don't like, and we don't put our entrepreneur hats in and say, hey, if there's going to be a problem, you know, let me go solve it, like in the words of the famous Vanilla Ice. And, you know, that's really, like I said, an invitation to get in and be solutions people rather than complaining. And I'm getting sick of it. I mean, social media, I'm almost checked out of completely, just because I'm so sick about of hearing people just point out with never like the, hey, I don't like this, and here's what I went and did about solving it. It's kind of frustrating. But it was nice to have Art on the show. I always love watching people who, again, are hustlers that really push themselves. It makes me want to work harder. And I work a lot of hours a day, but when somebody outshines you and puts in a little bit more effort, it makes you want to, like, you know, not be outdone in a very playful way, not in a competitive, you know, depriving way. So I always love hearing from, you know, people just starting out, or like Art, where, you know, you see them on the upswing where, you know, they did the investment, they did the heavy lifting, and things are taking off and they're experiencing exactly what they pictured. And that's why I asked Art about what was happening next, because a lot of times one of our biggest stumbling blocks is that we get, you know, in the beginning it's really hard, and then so we put all of our effort into, like, just surviving, and we forget that we're supposed to be sitting back and you know, taking the next dreaming step with our enterprises. And I think that it does, that squishes some of us, and we play defense instead of offense. So in a lot of you, you know, you can scale up and you can hire people and you can create new products and you know, advance. It might, you might not hit the same intensity that you hear Joe doing, launching two new businesses a year, but you know, it could be interoperational. You could take your, you know, walk your own life as a third person and give yourself advisement and pretend it's coming through the eyes of someone who's not, you know, making excuses for you or giving you reasons why things are. Just like, you know, we do a morning walkthrough every day in all our operations. We show up at the front door and we look at our place as if a customer was coming through the door. And we also do it as if our biggest critic was coming through. Not even someone who wanted to buy from us, someone who wanted to see us tank. I want to see what they see. I mean, are we messy? Are we disorganized? Is it dirty? Is it you know, not as lit as well as it should be? Maybe not very good product offerings. Maybe I'm, you know, it looks like a flea market. Maybe, you know, should be more permanent. Maybe we should be dressed better. Maybe the smell's awful. Maybe, you know, whatever. But you make this running list of things, and when you throw your labor behind it, you're looking to increase all of those things. Maybe maybe you're going to nitpick at a certain point where the stuff you're noticing is, like, really tiny and no one else notices it. But when you do that, when you're your own critic, then you don't get, like, you know, curveballed. You don't get, so it doesn't sneak up on you. And all of a sudden you look around and, you know, you're just surrounded by disasters. And so it's extremely helpful to be a, you know, a morning critic of all your operations. And that way you're always improving, because that's what we do in business. Is our job is to add value to things. That means taking something, knowing what its value is. That's the counting part of what we do. That's where the logical part of our brain, we take inventory and we count things and we categorize things, put them on a spreadsheet. We don't do anything with them yet. We just know what they are, so that we know our numbers. Knowing your numbers does not improve your numbers. But once you know your numbers, then your imaginative brain, you could fill in the understanding of your environments and you could start dreaming about them. That's where your possibilities go up. If you dream without your numbers, then you're basically, you're daydreaming. There's not much substance to those dreams. But when you dream with numbers and knowing, then all you're doing is you're allowing your brain to take the next logical step in the areas that you're currently not doing. And these aren't just, these are guesses, but these have some stuff behind them. These are educated versions of those same guesses. And that's where, you know, I'm guided. You know, a lot of my operations are only being thwarted because I just don't know the right people yet. So when somebody comes along and I'm blessed with having, the right person come through my door, I capitalize in seconds, right? I do not hesitate, because that is our secret sauce of the people that you could cooperate with and do business with. So I, a couple new operations. I'm going to kind of give you the play-by-plays on how we're starting up and where those are. Not just in a promotional standpoint, but if you were starting out X, like what of those same steps you might be taking. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, your host, and we could talk about business here on this little stage that we've got. We've been blessed with on 570, the services, Saturday service shows. And so we talk a little bit about, you know, the budding entrepreneur getting a start, using some of the terminology, but we also use lots of examples. We actually do this. We practice this in the real world. And there's a lot of different flavors of opportunities that you can have come visit you. It might be, you know, a small iteration where you've got some hobby that you just, you know, you sell at flea markets and, you know, and maybe some consignments, or on eBay or marketplace, or you see a void in the marketplace and you set up some services to be able to fill up those kind of voids and service customers who would otherwise not have any place to go. And, you know, some of the biggest companies that you deal with right now started off as small versions of what they are doing now. And so it's always great, like if you, you know, I talk to a lot of inventors. They come to me and want to know how to take inventions and bring them out to the marketplace. And one of the first things that we do is we find demand, right? So you have something and are consumers looking for this? So the advent of the internet made it super easy to find out what consumers are, you know, consumers need. So if you, if you're, you know, in electrical or you're in plumbing or you're in RVs or pretty much any specialty that you have an interest in, you could pay attention to message boards and groups and find out what people are talking about. And if you see a theme on those groups, like every morning, check in with your groups and see what people are talking about. If every day they're talking about the same thing, man, I really wish this, and then figure out if you have what it takes to be able to put, you know, solve that problem for that group. And a lot of those ideas will just come from demand versus somebody figures out how to do something and then has to scour the world to find out if anybody needs whatever they figured out. Because if it's an invention that does something that nobody wants, it's going to be a really hard sell. Or I should say it's not hard, but it will be a harder sell than, that there are people already saying that they want something, you know, right now. And you know, there are some really good inventions that are sitting on the shelves right now because they invented ahead of where the demand is. So somebody might have bought them up and then put them on the shelf. And now it's a waiting game and finding out they were in that perfect play. And a lot of businesses, like right now, the shipping containers, for instance, we'll bring that up. So all of this whole COVID and unemployment and, you know, all of these supply chain shortages have created a disruption in how you get stuff. We're super used to being able to get a lot of our raw materials from overseas. Even some of our retail goods, we get them manufactured and sent overseas. So when you have a shipping container problem, right, so these boats are loading up with all these big cargoes, boxes, and they have to be unloaded here and brought into the States. Well, right now there's just, you know, hundreds of them anchored off of the coast because there just aren't enough port workers or semi workers or whatever it is to be able to take it. So if you had the ability to do something like that, you know, I'd open Joe's Dock Workers, whatever, in the middle of any state that touches the ocean. And, you know, you could totally do what Florida is doing, which is see if we could take some of the California or the New York or other ports and see if we can get some of that offloaded. So I don't know if a ship captain would rather, you know, get unanchored and offload their stuff if they had to travel, you know, through the canal to reach Florida rather than California. But it might be worth pursuing. But that's the kind of stuff where you look through that filter and see if I can do what's happening. See if that problem that I'm witnessing right now can be solved with one of the ideas, you know, that's currently in my head. So now when you're a serial entrepreneur like I am, a lot of your endeavors are connected to other endeavors, right? And so I was putting together the Makerspace in Struthers. And Makerspace is basically, I teach you how to use some equipment like laser engravers and 3D printers and stuff like that. And I wanted to showcase things that could be produced here in Youngstown. So this, the front of the retail shop basically will be displayed items that have been manufactured here in the Valley. Because I would much rather be able to buy things that were manufactured here and see that money go to the people in my community rather than buying on the retail side. So it's connected to what I just talked about a minute ago with if we're purchasing at the lowest price, it means we're going to be dependent on cargo ships. If we can't get anything at those lower prices, it doesn't matter how cheap it is, it's not available. So now is a really good time in this cycle to support local vendors who can produce the items, like support them, and then they get to grow up, and then you get homegrown companies that can produce and never have to put it on a boat to get to you. And what and because of where we're at, you don't even have that cost competition between that. So if your widget costs 20% more than what's coming overseas that nobody can get, it's cool that it costs 20% more. Our labor costs are better. I'd much rather have someone who's producing with a wage at $15 or $20 an hour in their back room rather than $3 an hour. I want to do that. I want to be complicit in making things more valuable. So getting back to my shelves, so I want things on the shelves that people produced in my community, and then it's got to have an audience. You've got to want to come to Joe's store. And I was contemplating, like, what's the draw? I mean, I could say it on the radio. I could say, hey, guys, come down and see the stuff that's produced. And many of you would, right? But it's not something that you would do as just part of your routine. You'd be doing it as a favor to Joe, right? And you would show up as a favor to Joe. And maybe as people who advocate like I do, you would show up and purchase it. But it would not have broad appeal for people who did not want to do the right thing. It would just be people who were supporting more of an ideal than what they really would go by if nobody was watching, or they weren't doing something, paying a little bit more but feeling good the fact that you were supporting your community. So I needed broader appeal. So now I created a coffee shop because I was already into coffee already. I'm a coffee snob. I love coffee. And when I meet with my investment partners, we do it first thing in the morning, 6 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning. We go to a coffee shop, we sit around and we hash out the next round of plans for companies that we're going to invest in or start or buy or whatever. And I was supporting coffee shops lately because they're of worker shortages. They haven't been open in the morning hours, so I mean, I can't break away from the business day midday. I can only do it early in the morning. So if I put my own coffee shop together, I have a place to meet, and I will. When I'm meeting at, we'll say, Starbucks. Well, Starbucks isn't specifically put together for business meetings, right? They're put together for people to get their coffee and get out of the road. They are a retailer. Well, I want to cater to people who are hashing out solving problems. So I'm dedicating like two sitting areas for people that can reserve for, making investment meetings or talking to a professional or whatever, because there's certain things like I don't necessarily need to be catered to when I'm in that, but it'd be nice to be able to have some beverages and some infrastructure for me to show a presentation or connect to the internet and make it really easy, and not having so much like other people's talking when I'm sharing, financial information. And so that the back area of the store is going to be for those sitting areas, and the front area of the store is just going to be for people sitting around talking, enjoying some breakfast stuff with some coffee. And then there's my draw. Now I have people. I can support that building. I believe 50 people at any given time. We're going to hit the morning hours when people are on their way to work. And when people are in there and they see on the shelves that there's Youngstown produced product, while they're there, I can do a favor to area businesses and help distribute some of their product. I'd really like us to be like a premier source for that product. So my goal was not to make the whole thing so it had to support through the consignment. I want my consignment rates to be low. I just want to sell stuff, maybe a couple dollars here and there to pay for having it distributed. But I want to make sure that if there's margin to be had, then the producers are the ones that realize that margin. And I just set up the, to facilitate the sale. The more people have access to local products, the more chance they are going to buy local products. And that will be, the advancement of this enterprise is to help local vendors do sales. And, you know, I plan on opening one in Struthers, one in Boardman, one in Canfield, one in Youngstown. And as this is the first proof of concept, it's a little bit on the smaller size, but the next variation or iteration might be 100 people it will support. Maybe it'll go from the size of a Chipotle to a size of a, you know, I don't know, something double what you're used to in a Chipotle. But, you know, it'll have the same values of people are on their way to work. So that's my one reservation. I stopped drinking Dunkin'. I'm glad I did stop drinking Dunkin' because it was the lines. I might wait 5 minutes. I might wait 15 minutes. And I don't like to be late for where I'm really going. So sometimes I had to bypass going and getting coffee because of that. So I just bought my own equipment, started by brewing my own stuff, started sourcing my beans from places that I really liked. And that's when I became a coffee snob, is just out of that, you know, the whole process of not wanting to stop at a local place and just do it on, you know, on my own. But now I learned so much. Matt Camel from Branch Street, he was amazing at talking me through the sciences behind coffee. And that's what I kind of, you know, I knew this, but I realized that with a little bit more exclamation points, that every industry and every specialization has sort of like that finesse, like that specialization, the people who really know it. And, you know, people who go through, like myself, who were going through Dunkin', really didn't understand how wrong I had in so many of those ways, where it was okay. Like if you're doing Maxwell House through a drip, I would rate that at like a 30%, where if you're doing, you know, espresso, that might be at the 75%. So the experience for those of you who want to be a snob are going to be satisfied with coming to Joe's. And we were talking with Art here in the last hour. He's a guy I could see. He wants to enjoy this, but it's something that once you kind of know what goes into it, you have an appreciation for it. It's like anything else. You start drinking wine and it's just okay. And you have to start developing your tastes and your sort of like your thirst for different versions of stuff. So that's why I'm sharing the psychology behind, you know, what's making me do this. I have three businesses that are integrated by the success of this first one. Once the first one happens, then it can go to the second one. Art and I were talking about doing events, right? We partnered with a comedian, and he's one of our favorites. A couple years ago, right before all of the stupid stuff happened, we went to Cafe 422 in Boardman and say, hey, look, give me a day in your week that's that you're a little light on traffic, right? And give me that day, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to do a comedy show, right? You can sell your dinners to everybody who's coming to the comedy show. I'm going to sell tickets, and I'm going to put a couple of comics up on stage, and then you get to sell more food than you would normally on that day. I get to get the ticket prices for a date night out, and it was amazing. I had my brother there. He was playing some music. Comedian was amazing. So, but anyway, I met Quinn, who's the guy that we ended up partnered with, and he ended up going on to doing some national work. He worked some cruise lines, but I'd like to run a big show with Quinn here in the next couple months, where we have access to great venues around here, and now that we have promotional partners, it'll help put butts in the seats, and we can display some great, you know, great comedy. And we already have like the Martini Brothers what they're doing at down at Funny Farm Comedy Club. We could all benefit from having more people when they go to, you know, get the entertainment venues that they want. They're spending their money local. So you see this theme that's going around, right? It's not just the capitalism of trying to make a buck off of this. It's part of it. I'm not going to deny that everything that we've done and will do is a for-profit venture. But once we realize a profit, we can do anything we want with it. We can drill it right back into bettering our community and increasing the value. And that's why I sell this flavor of capitalism, because if we add value to it, and I make your property values more expensive, and I make the labor costs more expensive, and if we all just decide and we agree that we're going to continue spending our money here, we're not going to like create value but then hemorrhage it to Pittsburgh and Cleveland, right? We're going to stay true to it and keep pushing it forward. I wear a bracelet on my wrist. It says pay it forward, right? So every time I'm blessed with something, I'm going to push it and see if I can help somebody else get caught up to where I'm at. And, you know, as long as nobody breaks out and gets, you know, greedy about it and decides that once they have theirs, they're not interested in you know, reciprocating or even, you know, pushing it forward to the next guy, because that's where the connections die. So it's going to take a whole lot of advocacy from myself and everybody else, that we're going to have to tamp down sort of like selfishness And that's going to take talking about it. Why do we do this? Well, I do it to help people. I do it to create things. I do it to create jobs. I do it to make the world a better place. And in order to do that, it's not a single stride. It's not a single donation. It's not a single opening. It's a lifelong pursuit of making things better over a period of time. And that's why I always thank you guys for supporting all of my ventures. And, you know, I know I'm crazy at times and can't follow the curve, but I'm telling you that if allowed to continue doing this, I'm definitely going to make an impact, and I'm going to make a lot of more impactors get birthed around here. The only common theme is helping each other out like brothers and sisters, and helping everybody keep their head in the game and not break off. And once you have yours, you know, do your own thing. And as long as we keep being grateful for everything that we've been given from people who had no obligation, you know, to do that for us, we're better. So thank you for letting me spill that out. It's important every once in a while to be reminded, not necessarily what we do, but what's behind it and why we do it. So, all right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about business. I'll answer any of your business questions. So you can call me 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. Talk about things that are happening with business, give you some philosophy and strategy for starting your own stuff. And a couple of weeks ago, I talked about some MLM and some of these other, in air quotes, businesses that a lot of you have used to, you know, kind of get started and get your feet wet doing business, because a lot of the models get handed to you when you pay for the programs. You're paying for the knowledge or the access to, you know, stuff or the access to people. And a lot of you know a lot of business because of those systems. And I don't ever, you know, I talk a little bit not as romantically about MLMs and those things because of just the history of them. You know, what you have to do in order to be successful, the trade-offs that you have to make. And there are, you know, if you want to sell vitamins or you want to sell, I don't know. I don't know the other ones. Insurance products. There are more direct ways to do that. That doesn't necessarily require it. Now, if you join an MLM and they have an amazing access to like sales training, then yeah, salesmen are one of the highest compensated jobs that ever in our marketplace. And so if you learn how to be a good seller and you pick up the strategies of being a legitimate, ethical salesman or saleswoman, then it's totally worth the price of admission. I would totally take one of these programs, pay whatever I had to pay to get access to that information. And then if I decided to stick with it after the fact, then so be it. If not, I have the information. You can't take that back from me. And so, with YouTube and all of the other social media platforms, you pretty much can get legitimate access to people who are practicing in whatever you could see yourself doing. And a lot of people who get involved with either the energy drinks or the vitamins or whatever today's ridiculous MLMs are, they go after college students and, you know, they show some flashy cars and some big money that can be had. And there's no downside to it because, you know, maybe you have to buy some forced buys here and there, or even the ladies with the leggings, the LuLaRoe or whatever, it's a little heavy to be putting some of the burden on sellers, but there are true sort of like infrastructure that you can lend on. Because remember, you're going to pay for information one way or the other. And if I were to go out and start a company with woodworking, I don't know anything about it. I'd have to give all of my margin to the expertise that I'd have to buy in order to participate in an industry that I didn't know. And it's the same way. I mean, some of the businesses are just like modeled where you just sit in the cockpit and drive and you don't have to invent the how-to. I love the how-to, right? That's one of my favorite parts. So I don't do well in those models because, you know, I don't know. I'm just not a good conformer to a plan. I'm good at having a plan, but also pivoting from a plan and changing it and customizing it and making it adapt to wherever I'm practicing. I feel like I, you know, when it's mine, I could do anything I want, kind of a thing. But anyway, so, you know, the MLMs, there were some people, some of you who took offense to that it wasn't being treated as a legitimate business. And I'm telling you, if you look at balance sheets, does it put money in your pocket? It's a business if you make money doing it. So if you use the infrastructure of an MLM, it totally is. And if you're successful at it, you keep doing it. There's only one downside that I do not like about any one of them that I've ever hit is that you pretty much have to capitalize on the people you know to be successful. So if you can figure out a way to take your products and get in front of people without burning relationships that you have, because that'll visit you down the road. If you were over the top and exploited relationships to get sales, I mean, that will be remembered for all time, and it just makes for awkward situations sometime. There really wasn't I've never been directly involved in an MLM. There was some, not shady, but some, I don't know, some tacky companies that I got talked into a couple times just to assist with someone else's ventures. And I'm glad I never really got too deep in it. But one of the first ones was I was just a young kid, probably 17 years old, had a $500 credit limit credit card. Actually, you know what? I'll tell you the rest of this story on the other side. I'll write that down and remind to come back to it. I'm going to tell you about my, I think it was Carlton Sheets. I think that's what his name was. But anyway, you're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you guys being out there. I hope that we can add some value to everyone who's aspiring to do any kind of, problem solving or bringing to market some services or products. It's a heavy lift. Nobody's going to be bashful about saying that, you know, business is not, you know, an easy pursuit. There's always going to be, you know, learning curves, and it's never going to be perfect time to do anything, do everything. If I had waited around until I had enough money or enough time, then you never really get started, because I don't think in, you know, humans' existence there's ever been a surplus of money or time. You have to make a surplus of money or time, and that just means jumping in and you know, getting it done. And so I hope I can do that for you, where add some of my philosophical leanings into your everyday. One thing I want to talk about, Carlton Sheets and one of the first, I'm a 17-year-old kid and got a credit card, and I'm ready to buy into my first property owner's, method to become a property investor. And so when they talked about it on TV, I think there was a couple dudes that would do this. I think there was this young guy. I think he died early, and then the older guy, which was Carlton Sheets, that sold these how to buy real estate with no money. And it was easy to connect with those kind of business models because, hey, I didn't have any money and I could buy property that would be amazing. But I could never really connect the other part of the equation, like who would be willing to sell a piece of property to somebody that didn't have any money? Like, what would I end up with for, you know, if all the people who are selling to people with money, because that would be your preferred method, is to buy something or sell something to someone who had money, versus what would I be exchanging? Would I be exchanging, you know, would I have to gain their trust? Would I have to give them something of equal value? I didn't think it would be likely that I would ever sell somebody to something who didn't give me money for it. So it was hard for me to picture. So I was wondering, okay, you're making this claim, I'm interested. Like, how do you actually do this? And then they had a whole financial, it was gymnastics where you contorted sort of like the transaction process, right? And so I was interested. And the way they did it, like, this is me like oversimplifying it and summarizing it. But you would offer, that you will totally take the property off of someone if the person that had the property would carry the note privately rather than getting conventional financing. So I was thinking, okay, well, maybe there's a distressed property or something that people are having trouble unloading that they would rather not fuss with it than to fuss with it. And if it meant giving up getting a block of cash right now, if they connected with the right person, you know, they might be able to carry the note until, you know, you got things going and sold it. So the premise was that, you know, I'm going to buy your property and I'm going to sell it above what I bought it from you. And then I'm going to pay you after I sell it. And then I get to keep the difference. Right? Mathematically, that's totally possible. But I think that how many people would be willing, you know, to do that? Because, I mean, what would just stop them from selling it to the person directly? If it was easy to sell, don't you think they would have already sold it? Like, what do I have that would make me connect with a buyer any faster than they could connect to the buyer? So I think I had a lot of doubt that I had any ability to do what would be necessary in that kind of a model. I mean, if I had access to a bunch of real estate investors, I might be able to pull that off because that's something that I have that they wouldn't. But I bought the product, and I think you ended up calling a number and then ordering it, and it showed up in the mail. I got cold feet on it, and I tried to cancel it, and I think maybe a couple days after they were like, well, nope, all sales are final. That's when I started getting like, oh crap, what did I do? Right. What did I do? And so I think we went away from vacation and it ended up showing up and got like put in the bushes or something. I never actually received the stuff, or got delivered to somebody. I can't remember. I know I never got in touch with it, but I started like paying that credit card down, and it took me a while to get rid of a $500 that I put on that for that packet. I remember somebody, I think my dad or somebody found the box and said, hey, this got delivered for you a while ago. And it was been sitting in whatever, and it was all wrecked and wet and whatever. But I opened it, and inside there was real estate training, and about, you know, like 10% of the stuff had to do with, you know, making this contortioning sales. But the other of it was actually real estate advice. So I was like, you know what? I did something stupid. I bought this program. I'm not going to actually do it, but let me learn from it. Let me see if I can get some value. Let me see if I can get $500 worth of value out of it. And I'll tell you, in that book, I learned more about real estate, and I didn't know it at the time, but it's like the perspective from whoever wrote that training material, I got insights from a practicing real estate person. So I felt like, even though I didn't become a no money down real estate investor, I do feel like I really got to know some people in real estate. Now, I embarrassed myself because I called a couple of real estate and I'm, you know, used the language. And I called this one realtor and said, hey, is there ever an opportunity that comes down the pike that the seller doesn't want money in return? And she was like, you were watching Saturday morning TV, weren't you? And I was like, yeah, busted. So I embarrassed myself, but I don't care. I mean, I don't even know who that was that I talked to. And I've survived in business having embarrassed myself in that way anyway. So so it's funny, but it's kind of weird about how you go about purchasing the information that you need, you know, to do business. Sometimes, I mean, I'd love to, if somebody ever credited something they learned on this show as being just exactly what they needed to get their stuff, I'd love to get that credit, because it makes, you know, doing stuff like this where you're educating and teaching, you don't know how many people listening are just getting sort of like, you know, something that assures them of what they're already doing, or the one that was like, oh, I was totally in the weeds and lost until I heard what he said. So it's gratifying either way, that either I give people some assurances so they even practice harder than they normally would, versus that they get going because of you. And that's why I hit so hard on the people that are on the sidelines, because those are the ones I feel are just wasting time. And if you're going to have any regret in business, is that you didn't try it when you first had the idea. And that's why I'll always you know, be one to execute faster than, you know, I don't over contemplate. I don't sit there and, you know, think about all the things that couldn't happen. I'm like, okay, let's go try it. I'm usually up for stuff like that. Now, my next topic, and this is going to go probably into the technology show, which is going to come in up next. But I want to talk about it because when I get asked these questions, they're relevant enough to be going through someone's brain and they might be appealing to you. So, I hate this. I hate when it's talked about like this, but I'm going to talk about it. Where if what is passive income? And I got like lulled into that when I was a kid, that there was something called passive income. So if I took a bunch of money and I put it in a bank and I got paid interest for that, that was passive income. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to, you know, I didn't have to do anything. But if you get to larger dollars and you make larger percentages, then you could just have enough money that's in play to be able to create enough passive income that you could use your passive income to pay your bills, right? Well, I never could find this elusive passive income. All of my income came from work. Like, the more effort that I put in, the more money came out of that effort. It was the exchange of intelligence for problem solving, and I made more money as I, you know, repeated that process. So if I had idle money, there was no way that I was going to let somebody else use it, because number one, they're not going to be able to do better with it than I could do with it. If I wanted to do better with money, I would just give it to myself, because I'm really good at exchanging the value of cash into something and then reaping an increase in value on the other side. I'm good at that part. So I'm not going to give it to somebody else. And number two, chances are I'm going to get far less money from that person. Because they're not going to just pay me to use the money. I mean, this isn't a bank. So either I'm going to be investing in higher risk things that might have $0 returned to me at the end of the deal. And I don't know. It felt frustrating that I was contemplating that I wanted something with nothing for, you know, something for nothing, when I've never experienced something for nothing. I don't think it really exists. And I think it pacifies and it makes a lot of brains go idle. Whereas, you know, we're geniuses and our job is to bring genius out of people and make a bunch of money because of great ideas and willingness to work hard and having great principles and philosophy. That's where I want people to make a lot of money because they do stuff and know stuff. I'm not real big fan of people making money because they sit on their butts and let other people do that. And I don't think it's a good idea anyway, because I just don't know that there are enough idealistic people who are going to be like, you know what? The money came from Joe. Let me make sure he gets 50% of this. I think it's the other way around, where if I'm not directly connected, I think passive income is going to count me out of a lot of the decision making. So when do I get to advocate for Joe if it's my money or it's my investment that's in it? I'm just not a real big fan of that. So let's get into Bitcoin here. Bitcoin, I did a spot on social media on Facebook on last Monday, and I was sitting there saying, okay, well, Bitcoin is up to $57,300, right? And so I did this experiment where I took $5,500 and I bought some mining equipment for Bitcoin. And then I also took $5,500 and I just bought Bitcoin right out. So over the next year, I'm going to compare which was the better of the two investments. The first round in 2012 through 2014, we created a really big Bitcoin mining operation, and it was for proof of concept. So it was as big as we needed to figure a lot of things out. So we got pretty expert in that field. We know a lot about it. When I say we, I mean me. I did a lot of research and a lot of the math that went into it. But now the premise is, the reason we stopped doing the mining is because when we looked at what it cost us to mine, when you took all of the cost calculations and broke it down, you could actually buy them cheaper than it would cost you to mine them. And what's weird about it is because you have it's a currency that sort of does this exponential deflationary growth over a period of time. So it's hard to take a handle what the value is when it has this very very consistent replication or very consistent exponential growth. It, you know, doubles about every 4 years. So over a longer period of time, you know, it's hard to keep track. Am I dealing with Bitcoin at $57,000, or should I wrap my brain around this as Bitcoin at $100,000 in 2017? Well, today when I'm running a mining operation, I got to pay a light bill or electric bill, right? The electric bill is the cost of the electricity I'm using to mine. And that's in real dollars. So when I sell Bitcoin right now to pay for that electric bill, it has to be able to actually pay my electric bill. Or if I defer paying the electric bill, where if I buy the equipment and I pay the electric bill, but I just accumulate the Bitcoin, now the Bitcoin that I had that I wasn't using to pay the electric bill, it may be a year from now at the $100,000 level. So if I travel in time and I use the logic of what the cash was. So you got to go with me here. In 2014, when I was investing in it, it was $125 a Bitcoin. So if I had a Bitcoin from that point, that same Bitcoin is worth $57,000. So was I trading it when it was $125 and I had to sell some off to pay? Or was I trading it at $57 now holding that same Bitcoin? And that's what wrapping your head around it. I don't know which is going to maintain more value, the Bitcoin I just bought or the Bitcoin that now I make over an extended period of time from that miner. And so it's sort of like that, the scientific approach to find out which was the better move. I had to put, you know, $11,000 into the mix to be able to find this out. But, you know, I'm tracking something like if I were to liquidate today, what that would be worth. So as the miner, as time goes by, the miner becomes less valuable. They only last 2 years. So I'm basically, you know, doing the same thing that you would in any financial realm, where I'm taking and decreasing the value over a period of time, and then adding the value that it's created because it existed, taking my costs off the top, and then you get to see in real time. So pay attention to that on social media if you haven't done so yet. You can kind of follow me on Facebook. That's probably the easiest way. We create a ton of content for that. I'm maxed out on the amount of friends that I can accept, but that does not stop you from being able to follow my antics. You could just go over to my profile and hit follow. And again, if you can try to friend me, but I'm sorry, I will not be able to accept that just because of Facebook's limitations. But anyway, I do encourage you, especially those that want to invest and you want to figure out which one is the better investment. And I say investment. If I sat down here with John Arnold today and said, "Hey, is Bitcoin a good value investment?" He's going to say that there are much more valuable investments because of the risk involved in doing something like Bitcoin. So this isn't trying to take some of your regular investments and allocating them into something like that has a high risk like this. But there's some, you know, speculation investing. Sure. I mean, take a couple dollars and buy some Ethereum or buy some Bitcoin and learn a little bit about it. Cryptos are going to do some exciting things for a lot of our infrastructure. When there's so much digital out there that I totally seeing a lot of stuff riding on the infrastructure of, blockchain. And so, you know, well, it'll be interesting and you'll be involved and you'll know a little bit about it going into it. And so that could be, it's not reserved for people who get credentialed. But at the same time, whenever you have a decentralized investment, that means that anybody can get involved. There's nobody stopping a scammer or a hacker from trading alongside of you. So you have to be smarter than them so you don't get yourself in the spot where you buy Bitcoins and then not have Bitcoins. Because I will raise my hand and say, I have suffered Bitcoin losses because of stupidity, right? And I'm supposed to be a pretty savvy computer and technical security minded person, and you're wading in an environment that you are, no matter at what level you are, you're a little outdone, because if you've ever run across a con artist, the good ones you will never know were a con artist. And that's, you know, a lot of the people that you're dealing with in other countries. If you've ever listened to my scam baiting segments, you're talking to these people that have no compunction. They do not care, no empathy. If they take $20,000 from you and you can't pay any of your bills now and you go bankrupt because of it, they don't care. They think you're a stupid American and you deserve it. There's not this, you know, giving and, you know, empathetic, you know, standard across the world. So they'll take you. And that goes true in Bitcoin. A lot of the origin of the materials come from China. I mean, I just bought a Bitcoin miner for $800. Guess what I ended up getting? I got a Bitcoin miner that, when I opened it up to see its workings and to clean it out, had been used. So a miner probably used it for its 2 years. It broke. They put it on the market as a Bitcoin miner. I scooped it up for $800 and I got basically a piece of junk that's not worth anything. Now, thankfully, I bought it with a credit card, and the credit card, they don't joke around, they don't mess around. American Express is crazy awesome about making scam type of transactions disappear, and it's exactly what I did. But I'm telling you, they just don't play by the same rule book that we do. All right, well, we'll take a little break. We'll close things out on the Bottom Line Business Show. One more little segment, and then we'll go into the computer show. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. I'll be back.
Be a billionaire, so freaking bad.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, host of this program. And in this final segment, let me finish off answering the questions about Bitcoin, because this is what people want to know. Number one, the valuation of around $60,000. Where are we at? Is this a good time to invest? I am going to say that I can't answer this with a yay or nay, because there's really, the pullbacks and the bubblings have been so unpredictable. But in financial markets, what I've noticed a lot of the world uses Bitcoin to preserve value. So if somebody in China, where the government is does a lot to devalue their own currency because they deal in a lot of debt and they devalue their currency, which means that their debt is also devalued, that a lot of the people of those countries, if you don't support your financial system, you use Bitcoin as a surer store of value. And so, in the United States, it's not as bad as it is in other countries. But if you're in a warring country, maybe you offload. So a lot of those bubbles happen because it's being used. The utility of Bitcoin, it works a little bit different. So when we see these bubbling up, you have to look at world affairs. And if it looks like that there's expectations or someone's heart, really in a hard spot with where they live, then they might use it and it might be overvalued for that reason. Now, 2 years ago, we Bitcoin got hammered. It was in the 40,000s and then it got hammered down to the 20,000s because of uncertainty and whatnot. Because remember, you're competing in the natural assets or the more traditional assets as you are with Bitcoin. And, sometimes that there are better things to be bought in the traditional asset world. So money comes out of the Bitcoin. And there's always a threat in China to being shut down. And there's always a threat in the financial markets to be shut down. So it's extremely volatile. So never will you get me to say this is a proper time to, buy or invest in Bitcoin. It's always very speculative money. I've contended the entire time I've been involved with it that it's either going to be worth zero, right, or it's going to do exactly what my spreadsheet says it's going to do. And there's not going to be like a safe time where once it gets to some point, it's a sure thing. No, it could be zero tomorrow because there's nothing intrinsic about it. A flaw could come up in it that everybody bails on it in a heartbeat. But if it doesn't, it's been around for, almost 7-8 years now in its current form. It looks like it's got staying power. But again, if I wouldn't flirt with this if you don't know what you're doing. It's just an indication that, if you want to throw a couple $100 at it and if you lose it, that's fine. But if it gets you in the game and has you learn about it, so be it. But, I would recommend first paper trading it before you jump in and start doing it with real money. See what the fluctuations look like. It's a marketplace that is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's not like the regular stock market where markets can take a breather and there are centralizations that can, if something bad happens, it could get flagged and it could be slowed down. World markets say that if it dumps, there's nothing stopping it from dumping. It will be allowed to go down as low as it goes down until there are no more sellers or no or up when there's no more buyers. So that's something to take into consideration. But you can use me as the example because I know enough about it to know what I'm willing to lose and what I'm willing, what the risks are and what could be gained. But I have this magical spreadsheet that I've used since I got involved in Bitcoin. And I took the valuation and I every 4 years the thing it gets reduced by half. So the reward system gets reduced by half. And so every 4 years, in order for people to keep doing it, they have to have rewards, have to be valuable enough to justify doing it. And you can pretty accurately know that every 4 years it's going to double up until, 30 years from now is when the last segment or Satoshi of Bitcoin are going to be released. And so where do I think we should be right now? My spreadsheet says that we should be at the $60,000 level, right? And which we are. And within the next 2 years, we should be making our moves towards the $120,000 level. So that's my prediction now. I think in 2024 or 2023, 2023, the end of 2023, we should be on our way to about $120,000. If the reduction, everything goes as, if everything stays status quo, that's what my spreadsheet says that we should be there. Now, in terms of what it's done in the past, usually before, it's usually a little early to the game as far as valuation where it gets to the point more of like assumed halvings. Maybe a year before it happens, money starts drilling in there and actually inflates it a little bit. And I think that's when it's most volatile too, when it's close to a halving. So That's my official answer. And again, we're coming up on the technology show, so if you need to ask any additional questions about Bitcoin, feel free. But stay tuned. A couple minutes, Youngstown Computer Show is coming up. You have now listened to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKVN. See you next week.